Hi everyone, my name is Adam Wiener, and welcome to the EuroAng Minute. This is the podcast that summarizes key movements in the urologic oncology world. We bring in experts to summarize these key important topics in quick formats so that you get the most out of your time. And I'm really excited to introduce Michael Lietman today. He is an associate professor of urology at Yale University. He is a clinician scientist with his research focused squarely on health services research in prostate cancer. In prostate cancer, one of the growing areas, of course, is active surveillance for prostate cancer. It's something we love to use to help reduce the treatment side effects for our patients in a safe manner. And one way that we hope to increase the impact of active surveillance is to increase the pool of patients that we'd like to use surveillance for, and that includes patients with intermediate risk prostate cancers. So we have Michael here to discuss some of the approaches for this. So Dr. Lietman, thank you for joining us. Why don't you begin by telling us a little bit about what we know about intermediate risk prostate cancer and active surveillance?
All right. Well, thanks so much, Adam. It's really a pleasure to be here. So, I think this is one of the big questions of our time, of the past few years, and I think probably the next decade. We know that the biggest distribution of localized prostate cancer risk is intermediate risk. It's a big bucket, and there's a lot of heterogeneity within that bucket. One interesting observation is that the pool of low-risk patients that we have known to be safe and appropriate for surveillance is actually shrinking, in large part because we're more selective in who we biopsy, and possibly because we're biopsying better and finding high-grade cancer. So, interesting phenomenon number one is the pool of low-risk patients that are the layup cases for active surveillance are going down. The pool of intermediate risk is getting bigger. And there are probably some in that group. I think we know there's some in that group who do just fine without treatment and are going to live long, healthy lives without any evidence of progression. But then there are some that do harbor risks for metastasis. So we know there's a lot more work to be done. I think we're overtreating some and undertreating some in that intermediate risk group.
Absolutely. I completely agree. I think we're all seeing that nationwide. So then knowing that there are some patients that it could be safe to do active surveillance who have intermediate risk prostate cancer, how does that impact your practice? How is that changing your approach to surveillance, and who are you selecting for surveillance?
Okay, so I think the first, we're still making these decisions using kind of, I think, like pretty broad generalizations. And so one of the main considerations is the percentage of pattern four. When we say intermediate risk disease, that encompasses definitions based on PSA level. We're a little less strict about PSA. If someone has a PSA of 11, technically they're intermediate risk, but if they have a large prostate, their PSA density may be fine. So maybe we can focus in on the Gleason 7s and really the 3 plus 4s. Or why don't we just take all Gleason 7s, because the amount of high-grade cancer seems to be a very important indicator of a patient's risk on surveillance and risk overall. So I think when I'm counseling a patient, the factors we're looking for are things like a low percent pattern four, those people who have one biopsy core that shows 5% showing grade group two. That's usually someone who we think could be a good initial candidate for surveillance. But I think other things need to line up as well. So I think MRI is an important predictor as well. If someone has a large PI-RADS 5 lesion that has maybe not been sampled well, I think that raises the concern that there is higher amount of disease that we just haven't got to.
So great, we have multiple ways to determine the extent of the intermediate pattern, that pattern four that's there, and using what's available, including what you see on biopsy and imaging. Are you using any adjunctive tests, genomic biomarkers?
I am, yeah, especially for people who are outside of the conventional active surveillance criteria. I do think that some of the tissue-based genomic tests like Decipher and others provide a little bit more information. We're looking to triangulate as much information and take different orthogonal predictors to help cut through some of that. Some of the other things that are still not fully reported or always reported in pathology are like the presence of cribriform or intraductal histology. Whenever I see those are clear red flags to me, even if the other characteristics are ostensibly favorable.
Right, so it really is pulling in a number of factors here. So the imaging, the genomic biomarker, if there's any cribriform or IDC, and then if it's 3+4, I know a lot of people use that 20% cutoff, sometimes a little higher, certainly lower is acceptable. So thank you for summarizing that. So you're a researcher, you're in the health services research field. Where do you see the field going? What are you most excited about for this space?
Yeah, so I think a lot is changing here. One of the things that we have been struck by is the national variation in the practice of active surveillance. Just based on our discussion alone, it's pretty clear that it's sort of like an artisanal approach, right? You might see two different urologists, you might see two different, urologic oncologists, but who have a different sense or an impression about how someone should be monitored. How often do you do MRIs? Do you do a repeat biopsy? How often do you do them? So I think it's really a call to action that not only does the research need to go a little further to see how well we're doing, but I think we should also look to hone in the guidelines quite a bit so that we have, a clearer formula for people who do this. I think that's going to help our patients. It's going to help clinicians as well, because it's sort of an open book right now.
Well, and thank you for saying all that because I completely agree. I completely align with your feelings there. The guidelines currently allow a lot of breadth, and they allow us to do active surveillance for people with intermediate risk disease, but we could use more refinement like that. And I appreciate someone like you taking the lead and trying to figure out the best next steps in honing the guidelines. So, look, I'm just going to summarize briefly. I think you've done a great job by telling us that active surveillance is certainly safe for certain patients with intermediate risk prostate cancer. We currently have a number of ways for determining candidacy, the extent of disease, imaging, genomic biomarkers, and we certainly need to look forward to guideline statements, consensus statements based on great data to refine who is a great candidate for active surveillance with intermediate risk prostate cancer. Dr. Leitman, thank you so much for joining us. I know our listeners are really going to benefit from hearing from you, and we all look forward to some of your forthcoming work.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
Okay, thank you so much. This was the Yarrow Onc Minute. Thank you all for joining in.